It's been a while, I know. But we're back. We're together. You've come back. So pour yourself a cup of tea and let's listen in on a conversation. The legacy Charlotte Mason left lingers on in our homes today. But friends, it's so much more than schedules, page counts, educational accuracy, and skills mastery. Charlotte Mason's life and example spoke of a simple life well lived, a life lived in devotion to her faith, her work, her friendships, her books, and the quest to find beauty in every corner of her world. In this season, we're going to dive into delight, bask in beauty, and wade through the wonders of poetry, art, nature, music, and literature in order that we may live our lives, as Abraham Joshua Heschel puts it, in radical amazement. He says we get up in the morning and look at the world in a way that takes nothing for granted. Everything is phenomenal. Everything is incredible. Never treat life casually. Welcome to season 4. My name is Leah Bowden, and this is the Modern Miss Mason podcast.
But I will never forget one day she looked at me and she just said, "Mom, beauty is my job." Oh. And I was like, what?
That's right.
She said, "Beauty is my job."
That was Chris Willard. Isn't she amazing? She was describing a moment with her daughter, with one of her daughters. And you'll hear the rest of that and the context for that as you listen into this conversation today. Tim and Chris Willard, you may have come across them on Instagram. They are both prolific sharers of beauty through words and images on their individual platforms. And I've just really enjoyed connecting with them from afar. They have lived in England for a couple of years, but before I knew them. So hopefully we can get them back and we can meet up in real life one day. But they are a beautiful couple with so much wisdom and inspiration to share. So this is probably one you need to just pause for a moment, fill up that teacup, grab a notebook, sit back and enjoy. Episode 1 of season 4, Beauty is My Job. Tim and Chris Willard, it is so amazing to get you on the podcast. I know it has taken us a while to get here, all my fault, but thank you so much for coming on the Modern Miss Mason podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, we are so excited. So some people may know you, especially if they are on the gram. I don't know if you're like my husband, Tim, but he tends to have a lot of homeschool mums following him nowadays.
I think I do. Yes.
Yeah. He just rolls with it and it's all good. But why don't you just start us off by telling us a little bit about yourselves, your family, and just for those who may not have not met you or heard of you before, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name's Tim Willard. And I'm married to Chris here. We have three daughters. Our oldest is just literally turned 14 this week. Her name is Lyric. And then we have a soon-to-be 12-year-old named Brie or Brielle. And then we have a 9-year-old named Zion. We lived in England for about 2 years while I was studying for the PhD. Before that, we kind of roved everywhere. We lived in Atlanta, Georgia for about 7 years. Before that, we lived in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is where both of Chris and I's families are from, Pennsylvania. So we lived there the first 5 or 6 years of our marriage in Lancaster. So now we live in Charlotte, North Carolina. We transitioned from England. We moved here as a temporary stop. And now 5 years later, we're still transitioning. So, but that's kind of like our little journey of moving here and there. When we moved to Atlanta, we moved there specifically so I could pursue writing full time. When I met Chris, before we were married, I was actually touring and playing in a band, and I met her. She was at a seminary getting her master's in theology, and she was the only girl on campus at the seminary. So it was,
oh, wow.
It was an easy spot. Oh, there's a girl, and she's beautiful. And
he will be mine.
Right. So we were married about a year after that, and I got off the road. And it was Chris, actually, who really inspired me to go back to finish my undergrad. I was almost 30 at that time. And so she really inspired me just because of her journey in theology, and she had studied languages. So I went back. So it took me about 14 years to do my undergraduate work. And then after that, I pursued a master's at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. And then the journey took us to England. So that's kind of a short little snippet.
I just want to jump on something, because that's, I think what you just said is so helpful for people to hear. Because I always describe myself as a slow bloomer, especially academically. Like, I just take a long time over grasping stuff and get, but I got there eventually. And one of my four kids is just the same. I'm always saying to him, it's okay, you've got time, we'll get there. And you just said you took how long over your undergrad?
14 years. And I can't tell you, every time I stopped or I got out of school. Now, I was kicked out of a school. That's another whole, probably
that's
a whole
a different story. Yeah.
Different story. But that's, and it's fun. It's all good. It was a shaping time for me. But every time I would leave school, I would have like some adult say, well, if you don't finish, you're never going to go back. And that just wasn't true. No. And I love what you said about blooming, because I even started a chapter that won't be in my book, but I started one that I'm a late bloomer, and that's okay.
Yes. So good. And I'm sure there are people listening now who find that incredibly encouraging, that actually you can. I mean, I've got friends who are in their 40s and just gone back to college to do their master's, and they're, I love that. I love that. I just having that, not seeing those, you know, young kind of early, even teen years or young adult years as the only time you can do academic study. So Chris, tell us about the girls, tell us about homeschooling, and maybe tell us a little bit about how you approach that.
Sure. So actually, as Tim said, we have three pixies, and I actually started homeschooling them while we were in England. And that's because my oldest turned 5 at that time. And we had actually planned to do it before. It was not because we were doing an international move, but I had a sister-in-law who was actually a teacher, and she was homeschooling her I think there were two boys at the time. Her third one wasn't quite school age yet. And I just looked at her and I was so impressed by her boys and just the education they were receiving. And so I really feel like having her was the catalyst for us to, you know, pursue homeschooling. And moving to England, it was the perfect environment. And while I was over there, we didn't have much. We had, you know, a few books. Lyric had reading and math, and but she had the English countryside. And so while we were there, I mean, we would walk the countryside, go to the pub, and it was the perfect environment. And I actually became familiar with Charlotte Mason, not from Charlotte Mason's books, but from Susan Schaefer McCauley, and For the Family's Sake and For the Children's Sake and The Hidden Art of Homemaking. I read all of those while I was over there, and it just created this passion in me to create a culture within our home, because that, like, even when I met Tim and he came and visited me when I was in seminary, we had dreamed about, you know, working from home, doing writing together, and just like having our children there alongside of us just was the natural outpouring of that. So I homeschooled over there 2 years until Tim finished his degree in Oxford. And then we moved back to the States and have continued using the Charlotte Mason method. We are also involved in classical conversations, which the two go together quite well, because of the, you know, one of the things with a classical education is attention. Like that is one of their main tenets. Yeah. And so Charlotte Mason with attending to details and just, you know, having your nature studies, like the girls are actually outside more than they're probably inside during a school day.
Right.
And I love that because, yeah, you know, they're propagating herbs, they're, you know, discovering nature, they're attending to details, they're noticing things that they might not otherwise notice. And so just cultivating that love of learning and the habits that they're forming, I absolutely love. So now that I have, you know, once I was introduced to Charlotte Mason through For the Family's Sake, For the Children's Sake, now I'm just I've been over the years devouring, you know, Home Education and all her other writings. So every day I feel like I can only read one paragraph because there's so much richness there. I just want to take and apply.
Yeah. You know, Chris, it's exactly my experience. I always say to people, like, take your time. Again, right, just like, you know, take it a little bit. I mean, my experience with the volumes, I read very slowly over quite a lot of years, and I would read and apply what I was learning, because that really is her message, isn't it? It's kind of, find these living ideas and narrate them with your life. And I think that sounds like what you guys are doing as well. How amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So tell us a little bit about life in England, because people hear me, you know, talking about, well, I don't know if I talk about much about life in England because it is life, but some people love to hear an American's perspective of living here. How long did you live here for? I know you were in Oxford, you've mentioned that, but what did you love about it? What is it? And maybe you could help, you know, are there things, rhythms and patterns of your life in England that you took back to the States with you?
Yeah, for sure. I'll start and let Chris kind of expound. We were there for 2 years. It was supposed to be a 3-year stint, but I got done a little bit early, which was kind of a blessing, but also not a blessing, because when we got there, I don't know if you've ever been somewhere where, whether it's like a new town, even in England or like even here, I remember going to Boulder, Colorado for the first time going, man, I could live here.
Yeah.
It just had that sense of home. And when we got to London, we actually, when we moved, this is a whole other program too, but we moved, we didn't have a place to stay. We just had a friend of ours who we had really never met on face to face, give us a flat in London while we looked for a rental. Mm. And then we kept going, because I was studying Beauty in the Works of C.S. Lewis, we were looking at places up and around Oxford. And so, we would go up there, look for places, and we finally found a rental. So we showed up in England with basically 5 bags, my guitar and my bike. And that was it. Everything else we had sold and was in storage. And when we got there, you know, London was kind of a revelation. We had only lived in small towns here in America. So those 3 weeks were wonderful as far as like everything to see and experience. But then when we got to Oxford, I was like, I could live here. This is home. I still feel that way. I'm trying to get back there. I want to get back there and live. There was definitely a new sense of place in our lives. And I'll let Chris talk a bit more about that. But there was just a newness to it. And it wasn't very, we kind of thought it might be hard to get used to, or we didn't know really what to expect. But what really happened was everything in our lives really changed. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's this romanticized idea, but it actually is a romanticized experience that we had, even though we experienced not just the Oxford, you know, idyllic countryside and then also London. But just because we're, you know, from America, and we things are more spread out, and we're really fast over here, and everything's, you know, huge. And so when we got to England, we kind of we evaluated our lives at that point, what we spent our time doing, and there was a major turnaround. And Chris, I don't know if you want to talk more about that and how it kind of affected our rhythms.
Yeah, we actually call it our Oxford rhythm now, because we've brought that back to the States with us, mm-hmm. just the stuff that we have learned there. And we always refer to our Oxford rhythm. And I think like Tim said, we went with nothing. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was in itself very shaping. And, you know, just watching my girls play with, they had one set of Legos, but they entertained themselves for hours in the flat in London. And then we would walk. And I remember when it was probably the first week that we were in Oxford, Tim, we had originally planned to buy a vehicle when we moved over there. And Tim had run out to look for a car, and he came back, and I was in the kitchen, and he looked at me and he said, "What would it look like if we did life differently over here?" And my heart just dropped, because I'm like, oh my word, what are you going to ask that? You know, because at that point, you know, I was a very sleep deprived mother because I had a baby. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, there were so many changes just even going over there. And he said, "What would our life look like if we didn't have a car?" And coming from the States, I was like, we can't go without a car. How will we take the girls to the hospital and all that? And he pointed out the window and he said, "You know, the bus stop is literally right outside our house." And at that point, I didn't really know much about the bus system in Oxford, which is absolutely amazing.
It is, yeah.
But the more I thought about it, you know, I thought, what if we do life differently here? And so we decided not to buy a car. And I honestly think that was one of the best decisions that we made over there, because we really learned to slow down and to notice things. And I don't know if you're familiar with C.S. Lewis's book, Surprised by Joy, but within it, he actually talks about his father not having a vehicle. And he said that he numbered it as one of the greatest blessings in his life because his father had no car. And he actually uses a phrase, like he said, "The deadly power of rushing about was not given to me." And I love that phrase, "the deadly power of rushing about," because what I learned in those years of not having a vehicle is, like, so much of our life here in the States was rushing about, running from one thing to the next. And we didn't live a slow life. And so what happened was, once we had no vehicle, we started making intentional choices. We would walk the countryside. We'd walk everywhere. And so the girls would notice things, you know, they would notice the cobblestone pathway that they probably wouldn't have noticed if they would have been in a vehicle just rushing by, you know.
Right.
They saw the pigeon, you know, getting his bread, and they were just captivated by all this stuff. And Lewis just talks about how that, like, modern transportation annihilates space. And I just think, like, that for us, learning to just walk and be and see and notice things, you notice beauty, you notice, you just notice things you wouldn't otherwise. So for us, one of the biggest things was, you know, not having a car and slowing down and making intentional choices. And so we've tried to carry that over here to the States,
which is hard.
It is hard.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But I also don't want my kids to feel like real life happens when we get in the car and go somewhere. I want them to feel like real life is what's transpiring within our homes, because this is our culture, you know, the home itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's good.
I could linger there for a long time. What you just said there, I think that is so important. And I'm always fascinated by other American friends who have moved to the UK or just visited for longer periods of time, who have commented on this slower pace of life here. And, mm-hmm. you know, people stop and have a cup of tea and actually sit down and don't take to go. And you don't, when you're here and you live, I think we are as fast paced as any Western culture, but actually on reflection, I can see that even more now, that there are elements of the British way of life that does force us to slow down. And I love that that's some of the stuff that you picked up on, because, you know, really the people are writing and fighting against this hurry. I mean, you've got, is it John Mark Comer's The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, and all the books that were coming out even last year, even before the pandemic, where people were saying we have to find a way to slow down and actually be more intentional about the way we're living. And I love that. I love that you have what you said, Chris, about being in the home and seeing that and noticing this is our culture. And that's exactly where the values and the atmosphere of the home are cultivated. And that's where our children pick up on those ideas, don't they?
That's right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the pace of the home, I feel like, I mean, I'll speak for Americans, maybe, because this is where we're from. But like, I feel like we don't consider that at all. We didn't consider it. And that was the revelation when we were over there. You know, on a Saturday, we would rush off to Costco or go over here and do this without even thinking about what we were doing, without realizing that every decision that we make to get in a car and go somewhere and to speed about and decision to even have the kids enrolled in something else, you know, outside of the home. Not that that's bad, but like those decisions directly affect every, like your schedule, how stressed you are or not. And we'd never really thought about it until we got over to England. I remember this is kind of funny. I remember when we were getting the internet hooked up into the house, and early October. And I called the place and I was asking, you know, we're new renters and we need to get the internet hooked up. And the guy was like, "Oh, right. We'll be out in about 6 weeks."
Yeah.
And I was like, "What?" I was not ready for that. Like in America, that happens like the day you move. Some places are different, but I was like, "What? What do you mean 6 weeks?" And so I literally had to walk down to the McDonald's down like 2 miles down the road if I wanted internet, or go into the library at the Bodleian. Yeah. So like, it was this thing of like, okay, no one's really in a hurry here.
No, and they,
you know what I mean? I'm like, and that was a general theme. Like, hey, the British aren't really in a hurry. No. And like you said, if you want to have a cup of tea or let's visit at the pub, then let's do that. And that was it sounds so simple. But Chris and I talk about it. It was revelatory for us because we actually started evaluating our decisions to go do things or not do things. And I remember on Christmas, when our first Christmas was also strange because everything shuts down.
That's right. Yeah.
And the town shuts down. Like, if you're in town, good luck getting a bus. If you're, you know, past 9 o'clock or something. I think I actually had to walk home a couple times, like 3 miles back to the house, because I either missed the last bus or something like that.
Yeah.
But you know, everything kind of shuts down at Christmas. There's nothing to do but be with your family.
That's
and
right.
go for a walk. And so the idea of going for a walk is kind of something that we really cherish. And I know like England, you know, with the footpath idea all around and the bridle paths, that's something that really etched its reality into our lives.
That's amazing. I love that, and I'm sure any of the English listeners are realizing often what we take for granted is a real gift to other people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to have a fresh perspective on what we have, and I'm really grateful for that. Totally. Now, Tim, I have dipped in a little bit to your podcast, So you have a voice, like a person's, somebody you do. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
I don't even know how to describe it. I listened to a few different episodes where you have this voice, and I'm like, is that an English voice? I think it's what it is. Tell me about that character, because people are going to have to go listen now.
Oh my word, you are hilarious. I was not ready for that.
I know you weren't.
So I took a little, I have taken a little respite from doing the podcast. The podcast started with just an email I would send out to people on my list to encourage them on their Saturday. And I called it the Saturday Stoke because I wanted to stoke and encourage people.
It's very good.
And so one of the things, and it kind of happened by accident, but I'll give you the backstory from it. I do have this character or voice that I kind of spar with talk with on it. But this might make me sound very odd, but I am an American, so I'll totally take it if you guys over there think I'm nuts. But when I was in England and I was reading through the chapters of my dissertation, I would print them out and I would walk on the I'm laughing at myself because I can't believe I'm saying this, but I would print them out and walk the bridle path and I would read it aloud, but in my best Oxford accent.
Brilliant. I love that.
And my supervisor was Alistair McGrath, and Alistair McGrath he's actually he's from Northern Ireland, same as C.S. Lewis. And so he's got that like old, a little bit of old world Oxford, almost like the Queen's English.
Yeah.
And Northern Irish. So when he says God, he says God, you know, it's just God.
Yeah.
Which I love. But when I would, be talking or reading or my own stuff, I just really loved the sound of it. I'm not saying I have a good accent, because you can't even tell what it is. but our friend Asha, who is from Hull, she actually likes it. She's like, it's good. And maybe she's patronizing me. But so on the podcast, I would present like a counterpoint, and it would be, but Tim, what do you think about when Jesus of Nazareth is walking around the Galilee, the Sea of Galilee, or something like that? I have this like old crusty professor who's kind of like a curmudgeon, but he's English. And so, and then I try to, you know, talk back to him in a more, you know, a bit of a more rounded Queen's English, but I'm not very good at that. So that's where that's from.
Well, I think it's so fun. I have never heard anyone do something like that on a podcast before.
I will say one more thing about it. Yes, but I shouldn't probably reveal this, but in my upcoming book, I actually use that. Now, there obviously it's a book, so there's no accent, but I liked it as a device so much, as a conversation device, that as I was writing, and it is really me. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in the book and make it approachable, and so we can talk about beauty in a way that is conversational. I actually put the same thing in the book. So maybe if I do the audio book, I'll do the English accent or try.
Definitely
to.
Have to do the accent. Yeah. I think it's great. And actually what it does, it highlights the question and answer kind of dialogue and narrative of that. And I think that's really clever. So, but I listened to it a couple of times. I listened to quite a few, and I thought, when we talk on the podcast, I'm just going to bring that up randomly.
I love that you did that.
Oh, that's great.
I was not ready for that at all.
Sorry.
No, it's good. I love it.
So tell me, did you both study Lewis? Did you both study C.S. Lewis? Now, you know, people listening may know C.S. Lewis. Many will know the Chronicles of Narnia. Some may be, they may have read many of his other books, and I'm sure there are some who are very scholarly and have gone as deep as you guys. But have you both have talked about him already, but have you both studied his work?
I actually did not study him. However, being married to Tim while he was in Oxford, I felt like I was getting a PhD because he would relay so much stuff to me. And so during the 2 years we were over there, I had committed to reading as many books of his as I could, because what better place to do that than in Oxford?
That's interesting. I you know, people think if you do a PhD on C.S. Lewis that you're a mega fan. And I'm not saying I'm not a fan of Lewis, but I wasn't a fanboy of Lewis, if that makes sense. Like, the actual journey for me started, I was actually writing a book with a co-author friend of mine. And as I was writing that book, I was going through some older books, or at that point, my old C.S. Lewis books. And one was The Weight of Glory, which is an address he gave at a church in Oxford, I think around in 1941 or 1942, the date escapes me. But I read that, and that's actually, you know, he talks about beauty in a certain way in that essay. And then as I was writing the book, which in the book was kind of focusing on an everyday kind of beauty. Yeah. And then that night, as I was studying beauty and then that particular essay, I just happened upon Alistair McGrath's website, and he was accepting proposals for British writers and thinkers, two of which G.K. Chesterton and C.S. Lewis. And I was like, you know, I don't know that anybody's done a study on Lewis, along what Lewis thought of beauty or beauty in his work. So that was how it started. And it wasn't that I was like just immersed in Lewis. That happened when I was there. But it was an eye-opening thing for me to study him. and to go that granular on things. But again, like what's funny is then people say, oh, you have a PhD, C.S. Lewis and beauty. And they start asking me trivia questions. So I'm not really good at trivia, but I can talk about other things, maybe like northernness and some other things that are related to him.
Yes. I imagine as well. I mean, there are so many quotes.
Oh yeah.
Supposedly by C.S. Lewis that float around the internet. How do they make you feel? Do you kind of find yourself looking them up to see if they're true or not?
For sure.
How frustrating is that?
it's very. And then one was literally just going around, and it was I can't remember what the quote was, but there was an accurate one going around about living in an atomic age. That was quote. You probably have seen that on Instagram.
Yeah.
But there was one at the beginning of the pandemic that was, I mean, sometimes you can just tell. And maybe because I have a writing background and am a writer, and I've read him so much, when you see something, I'm like, I don't think that's real. And then I will totally look it up. I'm like, yeah. I don't remember that. Or usually the big, the big quotes, they're just, they're kind of prescient. Like you remember them, and they're vastly quoted by everybody. But yeah, it really bothers me. And one recently was everywhere on Facebook. And I think I might have posted something last year about, hey, this is not real. So stop quoting it.
Yeah. And then they do the rounds again, don't they? They start.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you can make up quotes and put anybody's name to it, can't you?
That might be a fun little thing for us to do. We should just make up C.S. Lewis quotes and We should write a book, Leah. We should write a fake C.S. Lewis quote book for homeschoolers.
Let's do it. I like it. I'm going to write a proposal.
Friends, I'm just pausing the conversation for a moment to tell you about the very last Modern Miss Mason workshop of 2021. It's called The Courage to Continue, and my husband Dave and I are going to be hosting that together. And the whole purpose of that workshop is for parents who are either wanting to find out about for the future or who are currently home educating children over the age of 11, and you want the courage to continue. Dave and I met and fell in love sewing our lives into young people. We've worked in UK youth work and education for 25 years. Dave is currently the operational director for a national schools charity, whilst, as you know, I've taken the helm of home educating our four children over the past almost 15 years, and we both love it. So join us as we talk about having the courage to continue educating your children at home past the age of 11. I'm going to talk about the Charlotte Mason philosophy, and for our UK listeners and viewers, GCSEs will be mentioned as well. Dave is going to talk about puberty and brains and how to ask good questions of our young people. And I am very excited because our dear friend Rochelle Barberina, who you will know from the podcast, has zoomed in for a pre-recorded interview to give some American context, because I know y'all ask about high school and you know me, I don't have a clue. So it's not a parenting seminar. We can all breathe a sigh of relief. We just want to encourage you, strengthen you for the journey ahead, and have a really fun evening together. As ever, with the Modern Miss Mason workshops, it is a pay what you can ticket. The link is in the details of the podcast. We're going to open up more slots for this one because it does fill up really quick, but still get your ticket today because they are limited. I can't wait to see you there. Grab your ticket and we'll see you on the 4th of December.
So Chris, tell me, how much do you think the girls have picked up on this idea of C.S. Lewis and beauty from their dad being so intrinsically engaged with that study and you guys both reading and discussing? Do you see signs of them picking up on this kind of stuff?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great, great point and a great question. Yes. In fact, I think Bree, my middle daughter, was 3 years old, and I guess we would have been in Oxford at that point, or maybe she was four, But I will never forget one day she looked at me and she just said, "Mom, beauty is my job." Oh. And I was like, what? That's right. She said, "Beauty is my job." And I just sat in that and I was like, that is awesome. And she is a filler. She is very aware, just as in general. And I just see how the impact of like the time that Tim takes, like in painting with them or instructing them about, you know, like social media and, you know, why don't we have, you know, a lot of devices in our house and so on, is because we want to preserve your imagination. We want you to love beauty. We want you to love the things that you should and hate the things that are evil. And so I just see that reflected in them. And so, and a lot of it has to do with like, whether, you know, if we have different stations set up within the house. In fact, this is, this thrilled my heart. We have a friend who is, she's actually a rock star singer. She's so great. She came and stayed with us a couple weeks ago and she was staying in one of the girls' bedrooms and she came downstairs and this is probably one of the best compliments I feel I could have ever received, Tim and I as parents. She was brushing her teeth in the bathroom. And she said, "I love the fact that in Lyric's bathroom, there are paintbrushes where there should be toothbrushes in the toothbrush holder." And I was like, yes, you know, and it's just a love of beauty. And it filters out into everything they do.
Yes. Yeah. Amazing. I love that. Beauty is my job.
Yes.
I've just written that down. It's so lovely. So tell us, Tim, why don't you just bring us into this idea of beauty and why is it important for us to know that it's our job? Why is it important for us to, you know, Charlotte May, I love one of my favorite volumes, although I say that about every volume of Charlotte Mason, is Ourselves, which is actually two books in one. This is the book where she talks about the beauty sense and how it is these elements like Chris has just been talking about, the atmosphere of the home, the art, the hearing beauty, being engaged with beauty, that actually children then pick up on these things, the ideas that hang around in their homes and lives, the values, the things that we celebrate, the things that we talk about around the table, that become their beauty sense, that linger. And, you know, we often, I think a lot of people may skip past or don't even engage with that within the Charlotte Mason philosophy. And I really want to do that in the moments we've got left today, because we've talked a lot already, but just why is this important and how, you know, for most of people listening will be parents, home educators, how can you help us to turn our eyes and hearts to this in the midst of educating our children?
But Leah, beauty is not that important, as we all know, in the modern world, right? Oh, yes. No, sorry. I couldn't resist.
You couldn't resist that one. Yeah.
It's hard to, if I don't have it planned, what I'm going to say, I can't keep it going.
No, I can imagine.
It's a good question. I love what Chris was saying about how Brielle said that, and she is our little intuitive, like, feeler and philosopher, theologian. I think we have annihilated so much space in our world with noise and chaos that it does, beauty seems like it doesn't matter. And one of your own, think the late Roger Scruton, or Sir Roger Scruton, is one of my favorite writers on beauty. And he says, or he said in his short introduction to beauty, he said that we live like beauty doesn't matter. And beauty is vanishing. It's vanishing in the world because we live that way. And that really, it kind of startled me. And it also made me evaluate myself and like the things that I value and the things that I fill my mind and my eyes with and my ears with. And this idea of the sense of beauty that you referenced with Charlotte Mason, and that actually starting in nature. Yes. And she references that about how being in nature is one of the first things to clue us into to beauty's call on our lives. And I try to make a case that beauty is not passive, in that it's just there and we kind of, oh, it's just, it's in a sunset or a sunrise or whatever. That beauty, if we're attentive to it, can really make an impact in our lives and reflect in the way that we speak to each other, right, the way that we think about things. It also can affect how we value certain principles in our lives, like the good and true, those principles. Scruton even goes so far as to talk about how a society that doesn't value beauty is a religious-less society, like mm-hmm. meaning that religion is one of those things in our lives that actually brings meaning to it. And part of that is the beauty that it brings with it. So I feel like in the modern world, this contemporary modern world of ours, and we had talked about, you know, earlier, annihilating space and not being able to see things for what they are. We go by them so fast that we just don't even think about it. So yeah. I think especially for adults and parents, for this, what I always tell people is don't underestimate the power of just talking about things with your kids. Like one of my most memorable walks when we were in England was right at the end. And it was, I think it was, or maybe it was the last year. I can't remember why I took Lyric on this walk, but she wanted to go for a walk with just daddy. And I think she might've been six at the time, maybe seven. And we talked about imagination the entire time because she's, you know, she's asking me questions about, they didn't know what a dissertation was or what is a doctorate, they would say. And like, why are we here? And so I would talk to them about what I was learning. And then, so I would just, on that walk, I used the clouds because another thing I love about England is the weather. I know maybe you guys probably hate me for saying that, but love weather. sorry. I love the weather. I don't mind the rain. And actually when we were there, people were like, this is like the most moderate it's been in 20 years, as far as the one summer we were there. But the sky is like an island sky to me, the light in it. And, you know, Wordsworth and Coleridge and the poets wrote about the sky. And I see that. And so when we were walking, we were looking at how, and it was close to sunset and how the light was filling up the clouds and like making them glow. And I was just asking her questions about what it made her feel like and what she thought about them. And, you know, she answers in just a child's response. And then we got up to the top of this hill and there was this beautiful tree with low, big branches. And we played on it together for a while and we just, you know, just played. And then after we left there, I asked her, I go, how is playing in that tree different than going down the road? Because there was right down the road was a little park that we could, you know, there was slides and stuff. And so she was telling me why it's better to climb a tree than play in a park. Wow. And it just came from me asking her a question of comparison, like, hey, did you like the tree better or did you like the park? Not that one is better than the other necessarily, but the point is I was just talking to her about it and she wanted to talk about it. And I take opportunity whenever I can, and this has become kind of a discipline with me since we left England, is I talk about the things that affect our imagination. And I think sometimes that gets kind of lost on us as adults, because we're so busy. We have so many things on our minds and hearts, and rightly so. I mean, we have to make ends meet. We've got to go here and there, and we're under a lot of stress. And so the last thing we want to think about maybe is, you know, how this show or how this music is going to affect us, but it does. All those inputs. And there's a book actually written by, she was a former professor at NYU here in America, G. Gabriel Starr. And the book is called Feeling Beauty. And neurologically, we respond to beauty and it does affect us in our minds. And when it affects our minds, it also goes and affects our hearts. And this kind of, you know, touches on what Chris was saying about ordering our affections. And so the inputs that we have into our eyes, our ears, and, you know, even our noses for like food and things like that, and the countryside, those all coalesce into this like kind of a little stew. And it's something that we can, once you start pausing and talking about, it can really affect you. I mean, even the pace of life affects how you talk to your kids. Like if you're constantly stressed, and we all are stressed, we all are dealing with it. But if you don't take beauty breaks, you know, and get away just for a walk. And it really is as simple as that. Like take a walk, go down the bridle path, or go in your, we have a trail in our backyard that Chris has been walking every day, you know? And she's like, man, I need my walk. And we do need walks. We need a beauty break to look at the trees, to hear the trees. It can settle us down. It can renew and refresh our minds and hearts. And these are the things that I don't think we realize that is affecting us with our culture of chaos and noise. What we have is a phone constantly in our hand. We're scrolling it constantly. We're DMing or texting people. And it seems like it's so ubiquitous. Who cares, right? Who cares? I mean, it just is, Tim. You know, get off of it. But you know what? I'm like at war with it. Not that I think technology is bad, but like I want, there's a sacredness to life that think we miss, that the world misses. And that, but you know what, when you watch it in a movie and you watch a movie that has that sacredness to it, or you see a baby born, or you're caught in like a spring rain or something, which Lyric and I were caught in a nice English thunderstorm when we were first there. And, you know, that's one of our best memories. When we were walking to the market, it started to pour and I put her on my back and she was like yelping, like it with glee and joy. And we ran down the road to this pub and we got in there and there was a fire going and we ordered hot chocolate and just sat there and reminisced about the storm and about the rain and about the fire. And those things nurture us. And that's what I think is missing. And I know I'm just going on and on here. I'm sorry. I get so passionate about it because I want us to nurture ourselves on the beautiful.
I love it. I love this idea of, this just being beauty chasers and raising beauty chasers within our home. So definitely. I'm going to just read out one of your Instagram posts here, Tim. Beauty chasers are thinkers and listeners. They see when the world goes blind. They embody quietness when all the world wants to do is scream. They give life to others when the world seems hell-bent to kill. They live their life to a heavenly cadence. You did that 11th of May. That was absolutely beautiful. And that phrase, beauty chasers, when I think about the children we're raising, the homes we are cultivating, and this whole concept of, you know, people may be reading poetry to their children, playing beautiful music, but that are we actually seeing them as beauty chasers, or are we ticking things off a list because this belongs to part of a philosophy or a and I'd love to hear from Chris. I'd love to hear, how could you maybe help us with a couple of things, two or three things that you think you intentionally put into your home and your homeschool rhythms that would be a catalyst for those beauty chasers, that would kind of get those things started in your girls? You already mentioned about the painting. Are there any other things that you could help us with, that you could kind of practically show us what you do?
Right. So I just, to reiterate what you said, it's, if a child is brought up in a home where, you know, the parents are beauty chasers, and, you know, they're going to catch that, just like Charlotte Mason says. The child itself cannot help but catch that. And then what happens is they become originators of beauty. And so you have children who are actually creating beautiful things. So for me, one of the things that's so important is for them to be creating original things, whether that is in artwork, whether that is in, you know, taking a plant and propagating it. So I always try not to squash any kind of creativity or original stuff they do, because I think it's so important to birth in them at the idea that they are creators and they are creating beauty. Another thing we do is I really think reading aloud stories about men and women who are heroes, and just like the impact, like especially when it relates to beauty or culture, the difference that they made is so impactful for young minds. So even literature, like when we lived in Oxford, my girls knew that one of my favorite things to do was to go into the old bookstores and look for first edition books or beautiful books. And so just having beautiful books around is so important, because like the girls know, like we have a friend who just bought a book at an old antique store, and the girls just were enthralled by it. They just could not get over it. So they're, again, we're whetting their appetite for what is lovely and good and pure. And I, and again, like Tim said, the other thing I probably err on the side of letting them outside too long, but like getting outdoors is so important. Oh, yeah. And when we moved here, like Tim said, one of the main reasons why we bought our house is because it connects to a greenway. And there's a path back there. There's a creek. They can go back. They in the spring. We're very fortunate to live in a cul-de-sac where there's two other homeschooling families. So
it's a commune. Wow.
It is a commune in a way. But anyhow, all the kids went back in the woods and they built forts, and they had a whole system. They had a judge. They had, you know, they had all like a mayor.
They created currencies. They created 600 clay coins and fired them.
Wow.
So having them be outdoors, I guess, would be the third thing that is so important to us as a family. Mm-hmm. And I remember Zion, our youngest, one time she made the comment, you know, Daddy, we're the adventuring family.
That's right.
And I love that. Yeah. I love that. Now, she probably might have said part of that because we had moved so many times.
Yeah.
But camping, going to the mountains, it's important, and it gets them just to see something bigger than themselves. Mm. And that's so important.
I love that. So we are being catalysts of creators and chasers of beauty with our children. And I think that was so inspiring. I feel so inspired just hearing, because how old is your oldest?
She just turned 14 a couple days ago.
Okay. So a couple of years into the early teen years, how amazing. Yes. And that they have had this years of, this being part of the culture of their home. Do they all remember England quite well? All the girls? Were they all?
Not Zion, because Zion was one when we had her. Okay. She often comments that she doesn't remember, but Lyric remembers everything. And Brielle remembers.
Remembers a lot, but Lyric, everything she remembers. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that's so great. So guys, is there anything you would love to leave our listeners with? Anything that we've not said that you're like, I really want to share this before we wrap up our conversation?
Man, we've covered so much.
I know.
I just want to say thank you to you and your listeners. And maybe just to, like you were saying, you felt inspired. I think inspiration is a catalyst to doing some just, you know, fun, adventurous, wonderful things. And Chris and I talk a lot about inspiring, being inspired, and then inspiring others with our own inspiration. And so, I would just encourage us all, me included, like Chris was saying, get outside with our families, maybe slow down and, maybe take some evaluation of how we use our time. But then use, maybe these thoughts on beauty and imagination to kind of, start a little bit of a renaissance in our homes and in our communities. I think it's so needed. And I think we can all be a breath of fresh air to one another if we're doing that.
Yeah. Beautiful. Anything else from you, Chris?
I think Charlotte Mason said it best. It's probably one of my favorite quotes by her, where she says, "More light is ever the reward of those who see."
Yeah.
And I like, because we talk so much as a family about seeing and noticing and attending to things, the beautiful thing is when you do that, more light is the reward and more things and more beauty are revealed. So I would just encourage everyone to see.
I love that. And I love when she talks about that maybe our whole purpose is to know glory when we see it.
Yes. Oh, that is one. That, yes.
Let's just sit there for another hour, shall we?
Absolutely.
Oh, she just knew. And I know I want to send people over to come and find you guys. If you don't follow these guys on, I will have all the links in the notes of the podcast, but go and follow these guys on Instagram. Chris has been reading through Charlotte Mason's Scale How Meditations. Chris, I was in
the last time I was up in the Lake District, I got to walk around Scale Howe on the inside. Oh. I've never done that before.
That's and amazing. I actually
got to see the fireplace where she would gather her students on a Sunday afternoon and do these meditations and read them and speak to them. It was just, I just kind of stood there for a minute imagining all these you know, women gathered and listening to the wisdom of this really faithful woman. So please go. I know it's been great just seeing the little snippets you've been sharing, and go and follow Tim. He does some great kind of slide through written pieces, and tell us about your book that's coming up, Tim.
Yeah. So the book, and thanks for rubbing it in about the Lake District and Scale Howe. That was great.
Sorry.
Oh, by the way, I've been there, Tim. Have you ever been there? I don't think so.
You haven't quite got the northern accent down yet, Tim.
The northern, right. I got to work on that.
Yeah.
So I have a book coming out that I'm keeping the title. I've always told people you can find the title in my Instagram feed somewhere. And it's can be pretty obvious, but the book deals with beauty and culture, and it will be out with HarperCollins Zondervan Reflective imprint, and it will be out in April 19th of 2022.
Fantastic. And as soon as as soon as we know we can pre-order that, we'll be sharing on the Instagram.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Guys, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. And I know that I'm sure our listeners are feeling full and inspired and ready to cultivate beauty in their lives and home.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Leah. This is awesome.
This is wonderful.
You're doing great.